Everybody uses different ways to measure teams. Who's the best offense? Who's the best defense? How about who's the fastest team in the National Football League? And how would you measure that? Need for Speed is the title of a new column, a posting that's up on Grantland.com by a good friend of the show, Bill Barnwell, and he joins us live on the line right now. Bill, thank you very much for being on the air with us. We appreciate it.
Anytime, John. How's it going?
Great. It's going great. We're out here at training camp, the final week of Bill's training camp, and, you know, you watch football players run around, and you say, that guy's fast, this guy's fast. You've endeavored to find a metric for speed in the NFL. You've tried to find a way to measure that kind of speed.
Yeah, certainly. I'm always trying to put numbers on things for better or worse, and it's an interesting question because I think if I asked you, say, who's the fastest team in the league, you know, you might have some ideas. You might think some teams are faster than others, and we know speed is important, but we wouldn't really know who the fastest team in the league is. And so what I tried to do is sort of work with the 40 times players put in at the combine and at their pro days and adjust them a little bit for how old they are and kind of incorporate some of the players in the team more than others. But eventually I came to the conclusion that Tennessee was the fastest team in football based on those 40 times, and the Bills actually are the fourth fastest team in football.
Tell us how you used the 40 times and how you selected which 40 times to include in this metric, Bill.
So, I mean, I thought about, you know, when we think about speed, who are the players we really care about? I mean, you might have a fast offensive lineman, you might have a fast left guard relative to other left guards, but that's not what we're really talking about when it comes to team speed. We're talking about the burners, the wide receivers, the running backs, the tight ends, the skill position guys. So I went with, I tried to consider the 40 time for those five players, two wide outs, two running backs, one tight end per team. The quarterback, which obviously helped out in the case of the Bills, E.J. Manuel, is faster than most quarterbacks. And the four players in the secondary. I didn't want to pick linebackers because some teams play a 3-4 with bigger players. Some teams play a 4-3 with smaller linebackers. So just picking those four guys in the secondary felt like a consistent mix. And then I just added a little bit for every year a player had been in the league, and the Bills really fit. The Bills are a young team. They're certainly a fast team. And they have, you know, players outside of maybe Fred Jackson might be the person who you wouldn't say, yeah, maybe he's not someone who relies entirely on his speed. But you think about C.J. Spiller, Sammy Watkins, the aforementioned Manuel. I mean, those are some of the fastest players in the league relative to the guys at their respective positions.
So what you have is a total of 40 times of the five players you mentioned, and that's where you get Buffalo's number of 45.56. Is that it?
Oh, yeah. So it's 10 players, those six offensive players and the four guys in the secondary.
Okay.
So your average Bills player, you might think, among those 10 guys, among those core 10 guys, ran a 4.5540 after you account for how old they are in the league.
Yeah. You also found, I found this interesting, that the fastest teams in the league, using your method, were not necessarily the most offensively productive teams in the league last year, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it was definitely surprising. Teams like just the top nine, for example, Tennessee, Washington, the Jets, Buffalo, Cleveland, St. Louis, Indianapolis, Miami, and Baltimore. Now, those teams have some fast players. They certainly have some good offensive players, but they're not among the better offenses in football. And meanwhile, some of the oldest teams in the league and some of the slowest teams in the league rated out as some of the best offenses in football. New England, Chicago, New Orleans, Pittsburgh, Denver, Dallas, those are all teams that rated out as pretty slow relative to the average. And I guess to me, you know, I wonder how much of it is age, how much of it is speed, but think about a team like Denver. They're not really beating you burning downfield. They're really beating you with guys who are catching 8-yard option routes over and over and over again, and you just can't cover all the different options. New England is very similar. Chicago, which is a team in that ranking, they're not a speed team. They're more of a size team. They'll get downfield, but they'll sort of jump over you to catch passes as opposed to running past you. So it was interesting. You think how important speed is and how meaningful speed is, but it didn't really show up here as being that important to helping teams win.
We're on the line with Bill Barnwell. He's a contributor for Grantland.com, and he has written a posting on Grantland that's called Speed Kills, about the fastest teams in the NFL. He says the Buffalo Bills are the fourth fastest team in the NFL. You also mentioned there's been discussion of this, Bill, and about implanting chips in shoulder pads, et cetera, to measure the amount, not necessarily speed, but just how players move around during games or even during practices. The Bills did that last year. They still do it, in fact. They're using a GPS tracking system. They take selected players and put the device on their shoulder pads that measures how much movement they have during the course of a practice. They use it to regulate snaps, to regulate workload. But tell me about what the league has planned and how that factors into your speed equation.
Yeah, so, I mean, what the league is planning is basically to put RFID chips in every player's shoulder pads, something they agreed to with the players in the last collective bargaining agreement. And the idea is basically to have all this information that you can now track when it comes to player speed, player energy, where a player moves during a game, and how a player moves. And that stuff can be interesting. I don't know that it's going to necessarily change the game of football forever. It's not going to be something that you're going to see in every single play when you're watching a game on TV. But it could be interesting, in some smaller perspective, for the teams within the league to analyze players and sort of make decisions based on, oh, well, what's this guy's range relative to, you know, your typical free safety? Someone like Jairus Byrd's a good example. We know Jairus Byrd can pick off passes. You know, he's a pretty good free safety. But how would Buffalo have changed their decision this offseason if it had been if they'd been able to see that Byrd was a guy who covered more ground in center field as that free safety than anybody else in football? And I think something where, with that kind of data, we'll know that 3 or 5 years from now, as opposed to sort of the guesses we're making, the educated guesses that teams and fans are making now.
I think the way the Bills use it in practice to measure workload and how much running around people are doing, I think that's kind of a smart way to use that technology, the RFID technology, don't you, Bill?
Absolutely. And you there's a great article in Grantland last week by Chris Brown about Chip Kelly and a lot of the things that he does to track sort of player energy and player health and keeping guys, you know, fit for games. And really that's something that teams really benefit from. If you have a guy who you're overworking, who's dehydrated, he might hurt a hamstring. He might be more likely to get hurt or to struggle and break down a little bit and not be as effective when he actually needs to be effective during games. And so I think you're seeing teams head in a lot of different ways in that direction. Some of it is medical. Some of it is related to dehydration. And then some of it is just for player movement, like you were saying.
We're on the line with Bill Barnwell from Grantland.com. He's a contributor and staff writer at Grantland. I want to go back. You wrote something a week or so ago. You've kind of been fixated on the Colts' Andrew Luck, it seems, the last couple of weeks, Bill. But it sounds like you think he might be getting a bad deal in terms of the support that Luck gets from the Indianapolis Colts. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, they're a very interesting team in that, obviously, don't need me to tell you Andrew Luck is a phenomenal football player. He's a not the best quarterback in football, but I think he has the possibility of being that player at some point. And certainly, he shoulders a heavy workload on that team, especially given how many injuries they had last year and how bad their running game was. And last year, the Colts were very aggressive and very upfront about saying, listen, we're going to be a power running team. We're going to try and run the ball down people's throats. We're going to throw the ball a lot, but it's going to be off of play action. It's going to be in situations where we've already established the run and done a good job running the football, and we're going to try and be a balanced football team. And some teams that make sense. If you're the Carolina Panthers from last year, yeah, you should be running the ball a lot because you have a great offensive line and a great running game and a very good running quarterback. That's a running team. The Colts were not built to be a running team last year. They didn't have a good offensive line. Trent Richardson was a really mediocre player last year after they acquired him. And Andrew Luck was really a guy who made a lot of plays when his team was down or when his team was struggling. And they would have been, I think it's pretty clear to say, and this is what I wrote about, they would have been a much better team had they been aggressive about using Luck earlier in down and distances. You know, you don't want to save Andrew Luck for 3rd and 12 every time. If you use him on 1st and 10, maybe you end up getting more out of him than you would using him just on those obvious passing downs.
Well, I mean, are the Colts in danger of wearing out Andrew Luck at, you know, in the early stage of his career here?
It's always tough. I mean, I think Andrew Luck is so good that it's going to be very difficult to wear him out, but he's been hit. Even though he's been throwing less frequently than you might expect, he's been hit more frequently than any other quarterback in football by a pretty comfortable margin over the past couple seasons, over his first 2 years in the league. I think it's like he's been hit 45 more times or knocked down 45 more times than anybody else in the league. And that stuff wears up. I mean, Andrew Luck's a big, tough guy, and certainly he hasn't been injured or hasn't even really shown any signs of injury, but it only takes one hit. And for a guy who's that valuable, a guy who's that important to your team, man, I'd be doing whatever I could to keep defenders off of him and keep him upright.
Hey, Bill, one more quarterback I want to ask you about. You wrote recently about Sam Bradford and how he doesn't even attempt to throw it deep. There's a dialogue about that regarding E.J. Manuel here in Buffalo. What's the benefit of, you know, deep pass attempts? Not just, obviously, if they're completed and you get big plays, that's one thing. But what you're thinking about quarterbacks who may not want to throw it deep or are instructed not to try deep passes? What do you think?
Well, it's tough. I mean, you want to have a balance. And certainly, you don't want to throw deep every single down, but you want to throw deep enough to keep people from sort of crunching in on the line of scrimmage and clogging up all your routes. And a great example is in Denver with Peyton Manning. He's not a guy who's going to throw deep very frequently. It's just not, his arm strength isn't what it used to be. He doesn't have that arm at this point. He can throw those passes up to Demaryius Thomas, those lob passes, or he'll throw the occasional duck. But what he's really doing with that is sort of creating space for his receivers underneath. He wants to have space for Wes Welker to cut across the middle of the field on a drag route and get open for a short pass. He doesn't want to have someone like, say, Cam Chancellor coming down and hitting Wes Welker because he's not afraid of getting beat deep. So you want to try and do a little bit of everything in offense. You don't want to have it be the base of your offense, but you want to be able to do it enough that you're keeping people honest. And I think Sam Bradford, for whatever reason over the past few years, and I went through a few different possibilities why it might be the case, but he just isn't a guy who throws deep. He doesn't do it very frequently, and when he does it, he's very bad at it. And it's been the case now for his entire pro career. So certainly, to that extreme, it's a problem. I don't think you have to be a guy like Matthew Stafford who throws deep all the time, but you have to do it at least a certain amount to sort of not only make big plays, but also then create space for your underneath routes and for your running game.
You know, I don't have the numbers or analytics to back up this gut feeling I have, Bill, but it seems to me a lot of quarterback coaches, offensive coordinators, fall in love with completion percentage and quarterback rating, and maybe that's why they instruct their quarterbacks, you know, take what they give you. Don't throw it deep. Don't challenge the defense that much. What do you think?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you certainly don't want to be a team where you're going to complete 67% of your passes, but you're never going to be getting first downs and you're going to be throwing two-yard checkdowns every single play. That's not going to work either. I mean, you want to have a balance. I mean, certainly it's not a question of being someone like, who's a good example? David Carr a few years ago had like a 65, 66% completion percentage, and just he wasn't a good quarterback because he wasn't doing enough stuff downfield. But someone like Peyton Manning, even if you're not going to be as good as Peyton Manning, I think that balance of safe passes underneath and then throwing the occasional pass overhead is sort of the balance you're looking for as a quarterback.
Great stuff, Bill. We appreciate coming on the show with us tonight to talk about it. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, John. Anytime.
Bill Barnwell, he is a contributor, staff writer for Grantland.com, and you can see his post up there right now, Grantland.com, part of the ESPN family. He's written about the need for speed, and he's compiled a list of 40 times for all the NFL teams for, as he said, select group, 10 players from each team. The Bills ranked fourth when you compile the 40 times that he took from the combine and tweaked a little bit. Fourth, the Bills' fourth fastest team in the NFL. You can find that information at Grantland.com. Our thanks to Bill Barnwell for joining us.